Hey, welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast, and it's the Roush Hour, back for another week. Nicholas Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio, 11 personnel. How's it going, brother?
It's a rainy day here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and that feels befitting of how Kentucky football fans are feeling now. But hey, at least Mark Pope's basketball team, they play this week. They got Big Boy Madness, so we've reached that point in the calendar year.
It's basketball season. Oh Lord. Let's not be negative. Let's start with the positive.
Okay.
Nick, how about one of your favorites?
Yeah.
Billy Napier beating Texas. Who saw this coming? And oh Lordy Lord, was this Texas? Welcome to the SEC moment. I put that out this morning. Barrett Salee's already trolling me, but think about it, Nick. Last year, here were the road games Texas played. Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
It was 11 a.m. kick. It was late in the year. They were done.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderbilt was the other one, and yes, they did play A&M at A&M. So maybe that throws a wrench in my whole theory here. But again, going to the swamp, I don't know how much you've seen this, but the players, the fans, the media said, good Lord, like we've never seen anything like this. I don't think Texas is ready for the SEC.
That's what it looks like. I mean, right now, Texas is, love him or hate him, they're breaking in a new quarterback that playing a bunch of games on the road. Mm-hmm. You got the schedule pulled up right now. They go to Ohio State. That's a hornet's nest at the horseshoe. They play Florida, stub their toe, of course. Red River, I know Red River's familiar confines, but then they go to Kentucky and Mississippi State. They don't play an SEC home game until November. Like, this schedule is not set up for them to succeed. And when you watch that game, there were moments that they could have easily gone out and won it. Like, they could have gone and won that game. And I think that game goes much differently if that game is at DKR. But not like that. They really have. It's the perfect storm of getting Arch Manning to fail. It's go on the road, get punched in the mouth a bunch. And then we got to talk about this offensive line, Mike. I mean, it's bad. I know the and that's probably where more of the welcome to the SEC moment is.
Right?
It's the play in the trenches. You mentioned that A&M game last year. They got after him, but they win a slobber knocker because their defense is good too. And Marcel Reed, he's not exactly firing all cylinders at the time. But this offensive line cannot handle the. They can't protect the quarterback, and they can't really run the football either. Six sacks allowed. Maybe some of them are on Arch, but Arch dropped back to pass 42 times. You know how many times he was pressured, Mr. Bratton?
Maybe around, I'd say half.
More than half. 62% of the time, 26 wow. pressures on 42 dropbacks. Like, you can't – they have guys who can make plays downfield. We saw Ryan Wingo make a great one. And yes, Arch might have missed a throw or two. There was one, oh man, he had a guy right down the seam on a post that he could have hit. But like, if you're going to be this explosive offense that's making plays down the field, you got to give your quarterback time. And that offensive line just can't do it. They can't do it, man.
Right. And if you missed it, and I'm sure you did, most of the cousins as well, because who wants to watch a sub 500 coach's press conference? But the first three questions he got asked, Nick. Hey, what's going on with the offensive line? Hey, are you going to make any personnel changes? Hey, are you going to hire a new coach? Apparently, they brought in an offensive line analyst this mm-hmm. week to correct all this. But yeah, I mean, they're getting it from all sides here. But yeah, I, and here's the thing, Nick.
Oh, Nick, I know where you're going.
I mean, hell, Florida ain't like the best defensive line front seven in the SEC. I wouldn't even put them top five.
They're stout, but they're not R. Mason Thomas in that Oklahoma front. Like,
nope. these next couple, South Carolina's not what they were last year, but they got some good players. Ole Miss defensive line, hell, they just whooped LSU's ass with a three-man rush for four quarters. Tennessee, that's about the only thing working on the defense is the defensive line. I mean, we can go on and on and on, but so this is Oklahoma's schedule. But the point being is,
yeah,
Texas is in for a world of hurt here with some of these defensive lines, and particularly this week that they got in Dallas.
Well, and then you get into a disaster scenario where he keeps getting hit, and because confidence is so big for quarterbacks, right? Like, what'd they say in Little John's, 80% mental, 20% physical, something like that. I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, particularly with quarterback play. And Arch Manning, one thing we know he does very well, he uses his legs well. He runs the ball well. Feels like he's kind of tiptoeing around in the pocket because he's so worried about all of the guys that are applying pressure on him at seemingly any given and every given moment. And so if he goes out and gets rocked at Red River, then he gets to go back on the road to Kentucky. Kentucky doesn't do a lot of things well. I'm very well aware of this, but they have a pretty good defensive front. And there's going to be a lot of fans there. It's a night game. Keeneland's happening. People have been planning trips for that. Like, when you don't have confidence, you can start to see some of those interceptions. The one interception on the little dig route they had where he just sailed it, like, that's – there are some interceptions that you can excuse away. Like, that's one you just can't – you can't miss high against cover two. It goes right to the safety. And that was the drive where you thought they were going to go down and recapture momentum and go win the game. And instead, he sails it high. He's a little rattled, and it doesn't happen. But, Mike, like, let's be honest with each other here. There was a moment where it looked like Billy Napier was really going to Billy Napier that thing away, right? Like, it would have been, I mean, that's like fired on the tarmac kind of bad if they would have blown that lead. But there was a moment where you thought, oh gosh, they're gonna mess this thing up, aren't they? They're gonna screw this thing up. Instead, Billy Napier, he did the Chevy Chase. He put a piece of bubble gum on the dam, enough on them to where they survived to live another week. And as much as we love to kid Billy Napier, like, credit, you got a credit to them where he got his guys ready to play despite how bad things felt. They had a bye week. They buckled down. They batted the hatches, and they came out. They came out ready to play. And so you got to give a lot of credit to them. So I went back and rewatched the game, Mike. And you know, I'll take notes. The first thing I wrote was, "Who is this, DJ Lagway? Where you been, brother?"
Like, and he's still injured.
Clearly,
always. and he's making plays out there. But how about the sensational freshman Dallas Wilson? I mean, he seemingly gives Florida a complete new dynamic. I think it was Cousin Shane I was talking to, Nick, but I can't recall a true freshman that has missed the entire year, and as soon as he's cleared, they're like, okay, he's starting. Like, that's when I knew, okay, this kid's worth the hype, and he exceeded the hype against Texas.
You've seen some guys who, like, the closest thing I can think of, remember Doriel Green Beckham at Missouri? Mm-hmm. Like, he was kind of similar, and I don't remember if he got into trouble, but there was, like, a hesitancy to play him. And then I believe it was Barry Odom at the time. I think Pinkel had retired by then, but they come to Kroger Field. And, like, Doriel Green Beckham has, like, 180 yards and is just bullying people. And that's what Dallas Wilson did, right? Like, that's part of why when I said, who is this? Well, it's because he has another badass to throw to. Were Texas fans upset that that wasn't an OPI? Because he kind of did just, like, bully. I forget who exactly it was, the cornerback. But, like, and I don't think it was – like, for me, I'll let that – like, that looked like hand fighting gone wrong, right? Like, that looked like hand fighting where the Texas guy just lost his balance. But even then, you have multiple chances to take that guy to the ground, and you didn't. That's where – I mean, Billy's doing it again, Mike. He's doing it again, and I love it. I love it. Last year was Lagway. Now they got Dallas Wilson, where they have actually a full arsenal of weapons. You see what they got defensively, and – I know the schedule is daunting for Florida, but, like, you got the players now. You got the players now to go win some ball games. Going to Kyle Field, that ain't going to be easy. But it feels like they have a chance with all of their weapons back, and they got a little bit of confidence. Is Dallas Wilson going to do that to A&M? I don't think so. But he's got options now. Like, you aren't just living and dying with Wilson and who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Vernell Brown, which, holy crap, that you want to talk about a sliding doors with that first drive. Because that, like, some of the times you wonder what the hell Billy Napier's doing with that play sheet. But that was a perfect drive. If they don't fall on that fumble, if he doesn't fall on that fumble after, like, that was a hilarious fumble, too, where he kind of, like, it hits him right here and he front flips, but the ball goes, like, that was some great fumble. That thing really gets sideways if they don't fall on it right there. But
instead, they probably lose the game, don't you think?
I mean, like, it went from disaster to perfection, just like that. And in the same way, like the one thing that I would like to I know a little ball. Maybe I'm not a ball knower. I'm sure a lot of commenters, a lot of our great commenters here on the chat would say that I'm not a ball knower. But one thing that I always bring up just being able to run the ball in situations where you have to run it. The other thing, too, that people sleep on, like sometimes you just got to get a couple first downs and punt it, right? Like, you got to give your defense a chance. And what did Texas do? They get a stop. Game's kind of hanging in the balance. They can't get a first down. And then, block punt, right? Like, that was where the game – I know Arch and them gave him a chance later on, but that's where the game just flipped on its heels. Because Texas, you go from a tie ball game, then you're down in a hole, you give up some big plays, and it's like, all right, let's just calm down. We're on the road. Give your defense a chance to breathe. You can't run. You can't get a couple first downs, and then you get a block punt safety. Like, that's where the game went sideways for him. And, hell, you could see some similar things in that other game of the day between Vanderbilt and Alabama.
Right. Well, and then so moving, looking ahead for Texas, we just had a little bit of breaking news here. Shout out Pete the Himmel. This is something he just shared a couple minutes ago. Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer is pushing a return for the week this week against Texas. There's belief that his return is possible as he's reacted well to surgery. And there at the bottom, Mateer's surgery on a broken bone in his right throwing hand took place nearly 2 weeks ago. Him playing against Texas would dovetail with the most optimistic return timelines as he'd be 17 days out from surgery. And shout out Eddie Radosovich, part of your On3 network. Mm-hmm. I saw him reporting from the bushes. Oklahoma is indoors, so they're keeping this thing tight vested. Thoughts on John Mateer maybe returning against old Texas?
This feels like they're sprinkling out a bunch of rat poison in Norman. And that trail is going all the way to the Cotton Bowl, because I know that Dr. Shin is the best doctor that's ever doctored in the history of doctors in the state of Oklahoma. And, hey, there's a chance he could play. I'd be saying there's a chance he could play, too, out there, that he's pushing to play. But it's the thumb on his right throwing hand. You got to grip the ball. Right? Like, it's not like this is a offensive lineman or even like one of those. Like, if this was R. Mason Thomas and, you know, he's got to play with the club on his hand, fine. I can buy it. He has to grip a football and throw it. And I don't know if you all watched John Mateer play football at Oklahoma this year. He throws the football a lot. I don't have the yards or the attempts per game up there. I would venture to say it's in the high 30s. You really want to test that? Like, is Colin Simmons and that Texas defensive line not going to get in there and hit him a couple times? He runs the ball a lot too, right? Like, I just, from a ball security standpoint, like, you can't chance it unless it's like 90%. And even then, it still feels like a big chance where, as I mentioned this previously, Willie, I mean, he's not the worst backup. And Texas has shown you they aren't they aren't the maniacal death team that you thought they were. Like, why can't Williams or why I keep calling him Williams? Why can't Hawkins run the ball around, complete a few easy passes, and be able to grind your way to a victory? Because like this game feels like it's just going to be played in the mud. Rivalry game. Arch Manning's been struggling. This feels like a game where 20-14 wins it. Like it's like a kind of a race to 20 mm-hmm. type deal. You've got some explosive playmakers out there, but it feels like a low scoring game. And I know Hawkins, we saw him turn the ball over some last year, but like that, just the ball security issues on the thumb of your throwing hand, like the thumb too. Like this isn't a pinky or something like that, or a ring finger. This is your thumb. You can't grab the ball without the thumbs. Like I'm not a zoologist, but I know that primates, they got thumbs. Raccoons, they got thumbs. They're pretty good at grabbing stuff. But, like, are you going to roll an elephant out there to try to throw a football? No. Like,
Would anything be sweeter than Oklahoma beating Texas for those fans than to even do it without John Mateer?
Oh, yeah. And I think they can do it. I think they can do it. But it is the perfect, like, whenever the surgery happened and Dr. Shin was getting carried off the field, that this was always going to be the plan, right? Is we're gonna make them think about it. We're gonna make them think they got Mateer. But like in reality, how much does it change your gameplay if you're the Texas defense coordinator? I wouldn't think a ton. I mean, you're going to want to heat him up regardless.
Right.
Whether he's playing hobbled or you got Hawkins, you're going to want to heat him up some. So, like, I like the gamesmanship, but I do think it's mostly gamesmanship to this point. And the perfect gamesmanship for this rivalry starts on a Tuesday. And, boy, I'm looking forward to the daily updates on Sooner Scoop on this because I know that message board is going to be popping all week long.
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say Eddie is still in the bushes there. So shout out Eddie and the group over there at Sooner Scoop. I also want to shout out Nick SEC Sean, gifted not five, but six memberships. SEC Sean, we appreciate you. He gifted Ozark Hillbilly. I think that's one of Nick's favorites. Dogs in DC, Coach Ricks, Ian Winger. What a name. C. Robertson and Amen. Hopefully I didn't butcher that. All of y'all, welcome to the family, courtesy of SEC Sean. That's my cousin, SEC Sean over here. The legend, JR, he's back. He gifts every episode.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
He's a big old dog. Shout out your dogs, JR. He gifted Young Billable. Young Billable, welcome to the family. What a name. And then Steven Up, he's on damn cloud nine, Nick, because his Alabama's ripping everyone's ass in the SEC. Shout out Steven Up.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
He gifted Jonathan Anderson. Jonathan, welcome to the family, courtesy of old Steven Up.
Welcome, welcome.
So who's the best? Oh, let's put you on the hot seat here.
No. Oh.
Bama, Georgia, or A&M from our three donators here. Hmm. Who do you think is a better team right now in the SEC, Alabama, Georgia, or A&M?
I got to get out the shovel and unbury Kalen DeBoering. I got to. I got to. Because that was – they won in a way that I didn't think they could win. And my hypothesis going into the game was that it might take some time for Ryan Grubb and Ty Simpson to figure it out. That's definitely the case. But the other part, too, you wondered, you see Justice Haynes tearing it up for Michigan, and you're like, how the hell did Alabama let him go? But man, Jim Miller, dude, 136 yards on the ground. And it wasn't just that they were grinding it out. Like they had six explosive runs in that game, especially that one there at the end that meant a little bit more to some folks than others. But they ran the ball well. And the part that I questioned about with Simpson going into this as a guy who hadn't played a lot was – can he make plays off script, right? Can he maneuver the pocket? It almost cost him with that scoop and score that wasn't a scoop and score. Like, dude, just go down or throw it away or whatever it may be. But he made some impressive plays off schedule. At one touchdown to Ryan Williams, that was awesome. And then the other part too, man, it felt like they showed a lot of resolve in that game. They did. They showed a lot of resolve in that game that they didn't have on the road at Florida State. I'm sure it helped that they were at home. But Vaney goes out. They punch him in the mouth. Cedric Alexander gets the first big touchdown. And then they're getting ready to take a two-touchdown lead when Pavi is stripped in the red zone, right? And that's where you drive down. They got the first down. They didn't take the commanding lead. But the other part, too, I mean, Vaney kept punching him in the mouth. They score with, what, a minute and a half to go before half? And you're like, gosh, Vandy's got a 14-7 lead at half? This is brutal. But Bama, no hesitation, goes right back down. And Simpson, poised in the pocket, gets a big play to get him started. And then they're 30 yards out. He looks off the safety, hits a man down the sideline, and then delivers the equalizer at halftime. And then from that, Alabama was like, hey, we took their best lick. Now let's go lay it on them. And they did it, too, by really kind of playing Vaney ball. They played a lot of keep away in the second half. And that was the numbers I wanted to pull up, too, because, like, the ability to just suffocate Vaney. They doubled him up, basically, in total yards in the second half. And I think the pressure got to Pavia. That's the first time we've seen – the uber confident Pavia made critical mistakes. Vaney ain't built to overcome two red zone turnovers. Mm-hmm. And Alabama made him play. That was a heck of a win. And I know it was at home. And when we look back, you know, Vaney's probably 7-5, 8-4 team, but like a very good, like one of those hard out teams. But to stack these wins up for Bama, like I think that was huge. And it really felt like you saw a team with an identity that can win in multiple ways. They did it against Georgia by hanging on. They did it against Vandy by putting their foot on the gas. They're probably going to have to do a combination of both when they travel to Missouri this weekend.
Right. Hey, and shout out, you know, there's two – I should have had some other teams in there, but I was just going by the donators here. Mm-hmm. David Chambers gave us $10. Sorry about citing – a riot with that loser you had on the show yesterday. Shout out Chris Marler. I'll let him know you apologize. But he's a big Ole Miss fan. Man, these Ole Miss fans, they are on one because they're undefeated. They deserve respect. And shout out Storm Chaser as well. Gifted a membership. Nick, shout out Storm Chaser.
Shout out.
He gifted Shane Wilburn. Shane, welcome to the family. So Alabama's playing Missouri, and then Ole Miss is undefeated. I mean, they deserve to be in that conversation as well. Where would you put them among the best of the best in the SEC? And can Missouri beat Alabama in Columbia this weekend?
I'm logo watching, Mike. Sorry, Missouri. Sorry, Ole Miss. Those logos, they don't win this league. Those other teams do. Kirby Smart does. Kalen DeBoer against top 25 teams. He wins these big games. And will Drink get his guys geared up for that game? Hell yeah. That place is going to be an absolute hornet's nest. But right now, I trust there was such a question about the playmakers over at Bama. Do you trust Kevin Coleman to be the guy who we're talking about Saturday night? Or is it going to be Ryan Williams? Of course it's going to be Ryan Williams, right? Like that's... I know Ahmad Hardy's awesome. I'm curious. That's the part that I think I'm fascinated about this game. I think if you're Drink, your path to success is kind of similar to how you won against South Carolina. You didn't need to win that way against South Carolina, but you played more of a methodical game where you ran the ball, you controlled the clock. It feels like you have to because Simpson can just kill you with these chunk plays. Like when he's sitting back there and has a lot of time, opponents are just kind of holding their breath. And I don't think the Missouri defense can necessarily hold up if they've got to be on the field for a long time. So I think that's the route they're going to have to take, but that really shrinks your margin of error if you're Missouri. Ahmad Hardy has to be the best running back in college football, and not just by killing you with 1,000 paper cuts, right? Like, I kind of harken it back to watching old Benny Snell football. We're like, Kentucky was in a lot of those games because of Benny Snell football. But then when it got down to the 20 and you're in the red zone, they weren't punching in enough touchdowns and they weren't getting enough explosive plays to deliver the haymakers that win those games. And I feel like this is going to be a game between Missouri and Alabama, or you name big name program that we've seen before. I'm pretty sure it was Georgia a year ago that they had on the ropes. Where, man, they're good at getting it down to the wire and making that team sweat in the fourth quarter. But I don't think they can get it done, Mike. I think ultimately they aren't going to have enough explosive plays to be able to deliver that knockout punch and get that win that says, damn it, not only can we win the playoff, we can win this SEC.
Is enough being made of the fact, and maybe this is no deal, I don't know, though, Nick, that we got an 11 a.m. kickoff for perhaps the best game in Missouri history here. They're, again, maybe that's a bit bold, but hell, they're 5-0. We knew they'd be 5-0 because they've been on a bye, so this, you know, no difference there. And the SEC knew probably Alabama was going to be Vanderbilt, so they knew this was an epic showdown. Yet we got the 11 a.m. kickoff, and wouldn't you know it, Nick? The following week when Tennessee plays Bama, oh, they get the night game. Oh, how convenient for Alabama! Is enough being made of that, or am I making too much of it?
Missouri, this is where you shine. A gray day at Faurot Field for an 11 a.m. kickoff. This is your bread and butter. Embrace it. And that's the part I get it. You want the big night game. You want to tailgate for the all day and get really charged up. But Missouri, you've been down this road time and time and time and time and time again. Just embrace it. Make that place an 11 a.m. hornet's nest. Throw some coffee on your face. Mix a little brown water in there. I got a recommendation for you, too. You could probably only do two of these. But I, you know, Mike, I know you like to dabble in the bourbon. Have you ever heard of bourbon cream from Buffalo Trace?
I heard of it?
Yeah, it's
every
amazing.
Time I go up there, I get a bunch of it.
It's amazing. I don't really know what it is. But it's like if it's Bailey's, but if it was actually good, right? Like it is. Oh,
I put that in my ice cream and it's good.
Oh, that sounds fun. So get you a couple of those at like 7 a.m. and then, you know, switch over to maybe some of the harder stuff, like, you know, like the, I don't know, I'm kind of in my diet phase, so maybe vodka soda, but, or maybe, you know what, go for loco, right? Get real loco. High ABV, not as much caffeine as it was back when I was in college and it was giving people heart attacks, but just get juiced up. You got this. It's, oh man, bourbon cream and French toast.
Mm. Oh, getting a little crazy in here, but I like it.
When was the last time you had French toast?
I can't even remember. Honestly, I've never been a huge fan of it, but maybe I need to give it another look.
Remember the little French toast cereals that had the little toast cut out? Yeah. I got kids, so, you know, I'm getting back into the sugary cereals game.
Right.
And one of them picked out Trix the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Not great, but also you take a couple bites and you're like, oh, yeah, this was fun. Like, scrolling down memory lane with some Trix.
Yeah, don't get us started on food. That'll be the conversation.
I'm hungry.
Shane will magically hop on here. Hey, so any other games? How about Georgia-Auburn? Thoughts on that? How about this, Nick? I'm hearing, would you believe this?
Huh?
I think it's quite believable that if Hugh Freeze loses to Georgia at home, turns around and loses to Missouri at home, this will be the third consecutive, and he's only been there 3 years, this will be the third consecutive year Auburn starts 0-4 in conference play.
Who? I can't survive that as an Auburn coach.
Yeah, that you already answered it. That's I'm hearing his ass is gone if he loses the next two. Do you believe it?
Yeah. I mean, he had 151 yards against A&M, who I know they've steadily progressed throughout the season, really put the clamps on Mississippi State, particularly in that second half a week ago. But yeah, like, you got to go out and you got to score points. You're at home, South's oldest rivalry. This is a huge, huge, huge spot. And I know Georgia got after the quarterback some last week, but like, I don't know what you can even take away from that Kentucky game. Like, I don't really know. We don't have to get into it. Kentucky's not good at the football right now. But the biggest part, the thing that, if you're going to knock off a Georgia team, you have to have a clear plan and a clear identity. What is Auburn's identity, man? Because
sucking.
Yeah. Like, you were a team that ran it down Baylor's throat, and then you went and played Oklahoma. You ran the ball pretty well, but late in the game, you knew you had to try to get explosive and get to those receivers, and they delivered. It's almost like watching the Eagles play the last couple of weeks, where they flipped a switch at halftime a week ago when they started throwing the ball around a lot. And then all their fans are like, you got to throw the ball all the time. Well, then they gave it to Saquon Barkley six times, and then they go and lose because they didn't run the ball enough. It feels like Hugh Freeze did a Nick Sirianni, but Hugh Freeze just sucks more than Nick Sirianni. And he quit turning around and handing the ball off against A&M. Like, I don't – you have these – you have talented wide receivers, and you have to get them the ball. We know this. We're not stupid. But you can't get away – from your bread and butter, and their bread and butter has to be running the football. And I don't think like Georgia has a good defense, but they aren't the Georgia defense of old. So like, really, this game to me is how, like, is Hugh Freeze going to give it to Georgia, or is he going to make Georgia earn it? Like, you have to go out and run the ball. You have to turn this game into a slobber knocker. I know that's where Kirby wants to, like, he loves to play in the mud, but like, if you want to go and try to throw it around all over the yard, Georgia's receivers are legit, and Gunnar Stockton can make clutch throws. I trust Gunnar Stockton. I mean, you're gonna make this a Gunnar Stockton versus Jackson Arnold game? Like, no, run the damn ball, Hugh. Run the damn ball. Give yourself a chance to win. Make Georgia earn it. Georgia's obviously the better team. But, like, you know, Gunnar Stockton, he's prone to making mistakes. He made a bad one against Kentucky and threw a pick where they – Kentucky had a chance to go down and tie. Now, they didn't do it because they're a bad football team. That was his first pick of the year. Like, I think – in my mind, this game is just all about Auburn. Like, are you going to use that bye week to get geared up and to do the right thing? Or are you going to let Kirby Smart just put you in a pretzel and body slam you? Because there's a chance that Georgia goes down there and does it if Hugh Freeze doesn't have his head screwed on right, which I think many folks on the Plains would say it ain't been screwed on right for a long time.
Right. So that's the critical question that I have for Auburn all week. You talk about trust in Gunnar Stockton. Do you trust Hugh Freeze to make these adjustments? Because quite frankly, I don't.
Well, here's the other part too. Ashton Daniels was pretty good last year. And he can give you a running element at quarterback position that I know Arnold has that as well. But like, at what point do you give it a shot? And you just say, hell, well, I know we got these awesome wide receivers, but, like, can Daniels really be worse than Jackson Arnold?
Hmm. He hasn't thrown a pick yet. Of course, he's had about four or five. It should have been picked.
Well, and the other part, too, with Arnold is it feels like he takes some – like, instead of interceptions, he's taking sacks that he doesn't need to. So, like, they're drive killers. They're just not as devastating as throwing the picks. So, this is clearly a huge spot for Auburn. And on paper, they should be able to make this a game that goes down to the wire. But I mean, like, Mike, as much as we make this sport about all these different factors, quarterback and coaching, who you trust. I don't trust Jackson Arnold. I don't trust Hugh Freeze. You can be War Eagle and all you want, but Kirby Smart and Gunnar Stockton, which, man, Gunnar Stockton, he's weird. I'm like, just from a, I don't know. Like, he doesn't necessarily, like, I don't even know who to compare him to, because he's seemingly pretty good at everything, but he doesn't wow you. That's like the perfect Kirby Smart quarterback, but it's not the one that has, that's not the one that has people being like, oh, this guy could win the Heisman. This one could win him to an SEC championship. You know who else was like that?
Old Stetson?
Yeah. The mailman. Is this the UPS driver? Stockton is Amazon Prime? You know, like,
they may literally be the definition of game managers.
But like, but I do think that Stockton's, I mean, that throw to London Humphreys that cost your Vols a game, right? Like, that wasn't a game manager kind of throw. It's just that's one thing that I'm fascinated to watch Georgia this year, because they have started to figure stuff out with their running game outside of Stockton. But just how are we talking about Gunnar Stockton in November when Georgia keeps playing these big games? This could be a moment where, hell, maybe Georgia, or maybe Auburn does do the right thing, but Stockton has a couple hero plays down the stretch that gets us talking about him as not a game manager, just like an above average guy, but as a real badass that's one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC.
Hey, we had a great question from, I believe it was Moonshine. I can't find it, but he wants to know, does Roush's Tennessee team beat them Hogs with Petrito riding again? Nick, thoughts on Arkansas, new look Arkansas. I don't know how much you can change in a bye week, but they're going to try new look Arkansas against arrested Tennessee. Thoughts on that matchup?
I was looking at the total, just like, okay, how high are they going to make this thing? It was 69 and a half points. This is a Big 12?
I think it's perfect with these two quarterbacks.
I mean,
they're playing great right now, both of them. Talen's taking a slight step back, but still, his numbers are incredible.
12 and a half is, they're daring you to play Tennessee in this game too. Because we've seen Tennessee, even in games that were, it can be somewhat of a shootout, but they've got a comfortable lead. It feels like they always end up winning by 17 or 14 and covering that crucial number. How much of a pulse can Petrino give them? Because my thing too, like, if it was against any other team, I would love to play the Petrino bump, that they're going to go out and he's really going to try to convince everybody that he can be the full-time head coach, because that's what he wants. When he went back to Arkansas, this was all part of his plan, and it's kind of lived out to what you thought it would be, right? They look pretty good, and then the offense is really rocking and rolling. He ends up becoming the interim. It's just Tennessee, they'll be happy to play you in a shootout. Josh Heupel will be happy to play you in a shootout. And so for me, it's just, does Joey Aguilar get a little too big for his britches and just start throwing picks all over the place? Which, you know, he's good for one or two, but is he going to give you four against this terrible Arkansas defense? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And I think getting to 69 is going to be tough. I think getting to that 70, like, because like 52 to 12 is still an under, or 52 to 14 is still an under. You know what I mean? Like that, and that's on the table, man. That's on the table in this game. So I'm a little hesitant to go to my bookie and use my hard earned dollars to play either side on this game. But it does feel like Arkansas has got the wrong team to try to do the Petrino thing and just outscore you to death.
Let me ask you this, Dick, based on everything you just said, not that you're picking this, but if Arkansas does beat Tennessee, which they've beaten them four in a row, Nick. I don't know if you realize that. Four in a row.
That's crazy.
Arkansas has beaten Tennessee.
Crazy.
If Arkansas does it, does Bobby Petrino keep the job?
The big one, really, to me, is that one against A&M. Just because of the, you know, we know what that rivalry has done to Arkansas fans, which I know my brethren in the Bluegrass State are going through a hard time right now, but Arkansas feels like as a program as a whole, that they can't get out of their own stupid way. And they will have these moments of good, right? Like they keep getting to the College World Series and then they get their hearts ripped out. They beat Tennessee at home last year, but then that was it, right? Hell, in basketball, they come back from these crazy deficits and win only to be an Elite Eight in a spot where you think you're going to win, and then you blow a late lead and you get your hearts ripped out. Arkansas, I mean, credit to you guys. You all are a resilient fan base. And you go to Jerry World year after year after year, and you have that team beat, and then you just – the agony of defeat strikes again. If Petrino turns the tide in that series, all those fans, those emotions from back in the glory days, they're going to be feeling them again. And then they got Hugh Freeze coming to Reynolds Razorback Stadium.
They get on a nice little streak here.
They could win three in a row going into that bye. And then Petrino could just be, he could put the squeeze on Juracek during that bye, install him as the permanent head coach. That's not crazy. Crazy things happen in Fayetteville with Bobby Petrino and winning three straight at home.
Now, I think you hit on something important because they have, I just looked it up, they've lost 12 of the last 13 to A&M. So you flip that script and you're like, wow.
Get you believing that like something, like a higher being wants this to happen. That God is telling you, the football gods are saying, you finally got Bobby back. You got to do this. Here's the thing though, guys. I've seen a Bobby Petrino 2.0 before. It had Rick Pitino wearing a tight little jersey with Lamar Jackson on College Game Day and then blitzing Florida State out of the water. You might get a year or two of that before it all just goes flush down the toilet. So here's the thing, Arkansas fans. I reminded you of that, but don't let it take your joy. Get drunk on Petrino, right? Because, hey, it might not last for long, but it'll be fun while it does last.
And I don't know if you will remember this because I don't, but was Todd Grantham the defensive coordinator? I thought so. So, I mean, he's available. I don't know if you've seen, he got fired from Oklahoma State.
Oh.
How's he not on staff yet in Fayetteville?
Yeah, he had to fire a defensive coordinator. I got to tell you, there were no two worse people to work together in the history of work than Bobby Petrino and Todd Grantham. I mean, they didn't speak to one another for half of a season because they loathed each other so much. You want to talk about an awful work environment? Todd Grantham and Bobby Petrino screaming at each other on the sidelines and then giving each other the silent treatment inside the football facility. Oh, what a toxic, fun time it was at the University of Louisville there for a year.
Hey, what? It was toxic under Petrino. Now he's fully embraced, so maybe we can get the whole gang back together. You know what?
Oh, Todd Grantham. What a guy. We need him back in the Southeastern Conference.
We also need Jason James. We need to give him a shout out.
Shout out, Jason.
He gifted Grievous Angel. Grievous, welcome to the family. Hopefully you are not a Todd Grantham fan after those statements. But, hey, one game I haven't asked you about, Nick. How about this? I know you love Shane Beamer. South Carolina, they've had 2 weeks to prepare. Same as LSU. You know, both these teams need to reevaluate some things. Both these teams, really, I think it's kind of a must win for both of them if they want to reach their postseason goals here. You talked about quarterbacks. You talked about coaches, two good coaches, two good quarterbacks when healthy. I don't know, Nussmeier. I don't know how closely you've been following this damn mess, Nick, but you know, 1 week, Brian Kelly says, oh, he's fine. And then they're having a bye week, and he says he really needs a rest. He's not taking reps. And then yesterday he said, I don't know what the hell you guys are making. He's fine. He's been healthy. So
gaslighting everybody.
I don't know what to make of this, but thoughts on LSU hosting South Carolina, who was featured in the Netflix documentary. It was one of the best games last year. I thought South Carolina got screwed. South Carolina can screw Brian Kelly straight to fired him if they beat his ass at home here. This is a very interesting game, I think.
What time is this game being played?
Well, LSU always gets a night game, so midnight basically, but no, almost 9 o'clock Eastern.
They got the Saturday night SEC Network special, which they don't lose much at night. But from an X's and O's perspective, I mentioned it earlier with the quarterback play. Well, Norris Sellers is going to give South Carolina a chance in this game, and Beamer's going to have his boys ready to go. As much as I loathe that guy, he's going to have his guys geared up, believing that nobody believes in them. They're the worst team ever. Nobody's giving them a chance to win. For me, this game is ultimately about how well this LSU offense, like, what did they learn about themselves that they can figure out during the bye? And for me, I know that they are not built to be the best running team in college football, in the SEC. But South Carolina's run defense can be the right antidote to get them to, like LSU just abandons the run too quickly, right? Like, if you dedicate yourself to the run game, if you actually try to run the football, even if it's not working initially, if you run it 35 times, you can lean on this South Carolina rush defense because it's not good. It's one of the worst in the SEC. You can lean on them and give Garrett Nussmeier some help to create some explosive plays off of play action. Because for the most part, it's just been drop back, go do everything for us, Nussmeier. They're just asking him to do way too much. So, like, if Brian Kelly is willing to dedicate himself to the running game, I think they should be able to grind this one out where, like, South Carolina will probably do some South Carolina stuff, right? Like, defensive touchdown, punt return, punt. Like, they're going to do some South Carolina stuff. Lenora Sellers is going to be sacked and then spin away and then get a 50-yard gain. They're going to have some big plays. But I think ultimately if LSU sticks, if they stick to the run game and they trust in it, that offense can get humming. And then by the second half, that crowd's rocking. And then they're able to bust a couple of big plays and then just really lean on South Carolina, ground them into the dirt before coming away with a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should be a fun one. That, you know, not that I need a big breakdown of Washington State Ole Miss, but just thoughts on Ole Miss. Are they the biggest surprise in the conference?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Because they had everything so well teed up last year, particularly in the trenches. When they lost it all, you're like, we've seen these portal teams do it before, reloading year after year after year. Just sometimes it's hard to hit everywhere when you do that. And for Lane to put them in this position so far, it's a testament to him. Particularly when, like, I'm not gonna lie, it's like, dude, if you couldn't do it then when can you do it? that was what I thought. It was like, if you couldn't do it then, when can you do it? And the fact that he still has him rocking and rolling this year, it's impressive. They'll have no trouble this week against Washington State. I am curious, though, like, are people just completely moved on from Austin Simmons? Or are we?
I think so, man. When you got, I don't know if you've heard it, but the Trinidad Drop Another Dime song, whatever it's called. I'll send it to you if you need it.
Okay, I got to check it out because I can't hear that name without, you know. Trinidad James, you know.
It's a banger. We'll just, as the love kids it. Would say. So they have fully embraced the Trinidadian. Now they lose a game, get his ass out of here. He can't play. But I think I don't know what they do after this, but I think they're riding Trinidad.
Yeah, and you really have to keep playing the hot hand. Ole Miss is going to be playing some meaningful football games late in the year that I didn't think they were going to have it in them. I thought they were going to stub their toes, but a couple of big wins in tight spots, that confidence that they have in themselves now, like that's going to pay dividends when they get into those tight situations late in the year. And that's to kind of go back to the LSU, like, yeah, you squeaked out that one against Clemson, but you haven't played good ball in a long time. And, you know, if things get a little tight, are you going to get nervous and fall apart, or are you going to lean on one another and push forward and be unfazed by the adversity?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real test is at LSU. The good thing is they got that home crowd. They'll be calling Baton Rouge. Maybe play Neck. They're going to have to bring out Neck for it.
They're going to need something. Speaking of needing something, Nick, I don't know if you've caught on to this. I don't know if the cousins either. I have to spell this out. Because some of them are really perceptive, but some not so much.
Mm-hmm.
We got all the logos at the top of the screen.
Yep.
And I update this each week. It's based on the current SEC standings. If you would be so bold, would you raise your left hand and point a finger to all the way as far as the... Or I guess your right hand. Sorry. No, the other way. There you go. There, all the way down there is old Kentucky blue. I waited till the end here. Man, what is going on? We're getting crazy rumors. People getting fired. People stepping down. Stoop says he don't want to address this. No more. I got a feeling it's just beginning. What's your read on this dire situation? Of course, things change overnight if you win a big game, but thoughts on where we're at right now?
Yeah, at least Texas kind of stinks.
That helped, right? That helped. Everybody's focused on that for now.
Well, so here's the big picture thing, Mike, is like Stoops is the winningest coach in program history. He got a contract extension that comes with a buyout. That's crazy. He got that because he was damn good. And when things spiraled last year, you know, you're the AD, you say, okay, you know, there's a lot of injuries. They won some big games early in the year, but things got out of hand late. But we got to give this guy a chance to rebuild this thing. And we believe, we've seen him do it before, that he can get him back to the baseline. And so Stoops' plan to get him back there was to kind of get back to what they did well, which is we're going to be good in the trenches, we're going to be able to run the football, and we're going to be able to win close games. Okay, so they rebuild the trenches, offensive line better, defensive line steady, consistent, pretty damn good. Running game, Seth McGowan, he's awesome. You fix the stuff that you needed to fix, but you aren't even in close games, because now what was once your strength, defense, is just getting picked apart left and right. They're not a good tackling team. Like, Mike, they were a great defense because they would give up five-yard passes and then you'd get tackled right away. Now they're getting five-yard passes and turning into 30. Like, 8.3 yards per attempt for opponents is the most in the SEC. The only team giving up more yards per game in this league fired their defense coordinator and their head coach. Like, the defense is so bad. And then offensively, the guy that you started at quarterback in the year, you had to scrap that plan 2 weeks in. So, and then to make matters worse, like, you're making these mistakes in crucial situations, like two-minute offense. You're on ABC. Second time you're on ABC this year. You got a two-minute drill. And you make mistakes that the broadcast is making fun of you going into halftime. The point of this was, it wasn't really the players, it was the coaches. The coaches will fix it. Well, now they look like a poorly coached team. So, at the bare minimum, if Stoops is around, everybody's getting fired except for him. Maybe Brad White still sticks around, but like, it's looking bad. It's looking real bad, Mike. And you don't really know where the tunnel is or where the light is at the end of the tunnel. So there's a lot of apathy around Big Blue Nation. They haven't won an SEC game in more than a year. 2 out of their last 16 SEC games. That's it. 2 out of their last 16.
Ugh. And they finally have a quarter. I like Cutter Bowley. I mean, I think, you know, he's not fantastic yet, but I think he's...
Yeah.
I think he's shown enough to let you know that he's going to be pretty good in it, you know, well, as he progresses.
Yeah, and he's like really up and down. He's really roller coaster. Just make the downs not so down, raise the four some, and get more of those ups. And that's really like, if you want to be, you know, one of those dyed in the wool, like I'm going to stay optimistic forever. It's just, what can we get out of Cutter Bowley these last 7 games of the season? Right. And can they be in a chance to win a game or two? Can they do what Billy Napier did against Texas? Because right. With every win, with every loss, you're losing everybody. But a win can get some people back and get you some support going forward. And there are still winnable games there. Like Texas is beatable now. Florida is beatable now. I know you got to go to Vandy, but you play a similar style. So, like, in hell, who knows? You got a rivalry game at the end of the year. Like, there are still opportunities to salvage this disaster. But right now, a lot of Kentucky fans are fed up with Mark Stoops, and that's why you're getting anonymous sources from anonymous Twitter accounts and all sorts of garbage. It's going to be swirling. Things are going to get ugly until you can win a game or two in the SEC. We'll see if they can get it done. We'll see if they can get it done.
Well, I guarantee you they're not losing this weekend.
Nope.
Yeah, woo-hoo. They're on a bye. But which game do you think on a more happy note? Let's end on a happy note here.
Yeah.
Which game do you think will be the best game of the weekend? And hell, I don't know that there's a wrong answer. And let's clearly we're not talking Ole Miss, Washington State, but any of the other games.
I think it might be that sleepy nooner at Froh Field. I think that will have the best high quality football. Whereas like Red River, South Carolina, LSU might be some ugly dogfights. I could definitely see Florida making this ugly. Mm-hmm. Down at Kyle Field, that's a game we didn't spend a lot of time talking about. But there's a difference between close games and good football. I think Missouri and Alabama are going to be playing some great football, and that it just feels like a game that's going to go down to the wire. And when it ends, the Heisman odds are going to be readjusting because Ty Simpson is just going to be carving them up, man. Like, he is efficient. He can make the big plays, and he showed – on Saturday that he can also make some ad-lib throws while under pressure that keep you ahead of the chains, that set up those big explosive plays that you're showing on SportsCenter as the game changer. So that's the one I'm most looking forward to. Start our Saturday with a banger in Como. Is Cousin Shane going to be there banging that big-ass drum?
We're thinking about it, but Paul Feinbaum, if he's still employed by ESPN, is going to be up there. Josh Pate's going to be up there. Might be a good time to go check it out, you know?
Heck yeah. Go to Bucci's, get some burgers.
Yeah. Hey,
cash only.
I just thought of something. So please let us into a window because we know you're day to day, you're Kentucky, you're following Kentucky, but you're on a bye this week. What does that mean for Nick Roush? Does it mean you're glued on the couch watching all these games, or is it the wife and kids say, this is our Nick Roush time. Where are you at this week? Because I would imagine when you were looking at the buys, you said, oh my God, look at these games. Yeah. But I'm just kind of curious where you're at.
Yeah. So I do this smart thing. My wife's family lives about 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. So for each bye week, last bye week, they came down. This bye week, we're going up there. So you get cousin time, but the cousin time, they can keep each other busy while dad watches all of the football. So, and that's honestly like, I grew up on 2-win seasons at Commonwealth Stadium, man. Like this stuff, it ain't nothing new to me.
You can't be hurt.
Yeah. Right. Like I can get over it pretty easily. I can sleep well at night. What's pissed me off the most is that I'm missing awesome football games. Cause I got to watch this bad team. Like the weekend that we had, Georgia, Bama, and Penn State, Oregon going into the wire. I was watching Kentucky and South Carolina. Those teams stink. right? South Carolina fans, I know you beat Kentucky. I can still say your team is not good at football because you're not. You got some good players. You'll be frisky, but you're not good. I had to watch bad teams. I want to watch the good games, right? And so, like, you know, I was writing about Mark Stoops saying zero tolerance, zero, not leaving, all while just watching James Franklin crumble. Love seeing that guy suck. Man, what a jerk that guy is. And also that game between Vandy and Bama, like, at first, basically I turned it on in the second half and all of a sudden Diego Pavia turned into a pumpkin. I was disappointed. I wanted to be locked in, and I'm going to be locked in for every single moment on Saturday. It's going to be awesome all the way until the very end when Tom Hart and a bunch of drunks are watching LSU just sweat out a win over South Carolina. They're going to be scared for a little bit, but it's going to get crazy. It's going to be wild, and I can't wait for it all.
Hey, last thing. Will you publicly apologize on this platform to Shane Beamer if they go in there and beat LSU in the middle of the night at Death Valley?
I will publicly apologize to Shane Beamer for disrespecting him as a ball coach, but I will continue to disrespect him and his stupid shenanigans. I will never, and I can even admit, Shane Beamer, he's good at getting his guys ready to go, but just grow up, buddy. Like, or get a podcast or something to get your stuff out. Dude, hey, I've never seen a multimillionaire coach want your job so much, Mike. He wants your job. I'm worried if he gets fired, he's going to try to come for it.
I might replace Cousin Shane with Cousin Beamer.
It'll be the Shane and Shane show. That Shane podcast.
They'll remove my ass in a hurry. All right, he's Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio 11 personnel. Let him know, Nick, where to follow you, where to find your work.
You can find me at RoushKSR on social media, on 3 Sports, KentuckySportsRadio.com, KS Board. Basketball starts this weekend, so we're doing a lot of that over at Kentucky Sports Radio right now.
All right. For the rest of us, that's 3 months from now. But we appreciate you, Nick. We'll see you next week. That's it for the Rash Hour. We'll be back tonight. What's that?
I said, thanks, cuzzos.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll be back tonight with Cousin Shane, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. We'll see you then.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.